Blog Talk Radio.
Mind Shift Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Mind Shift Talk Radio. I am your host, Stacey Emery, joining you live from Atlanta. Always excited to be on another edition of Mind Shift Talk Radio. I have my awesome co-host on the line, Mr. Billy Miller. Say hi, Billy.
Hey!
And licensed professional counselor, Ms. Kalina Brown. Hey, Kalina.
Good evening.
Good evening to you, lady. Well, today, guys, this is going to be a great show, okay, because this is something that everyone can relate to. Now, we are going to be talking about relationships, but it's going to be an interesting conversation because we're going to talk about the influence that our parents have on our relationships. So basically talking about that child-parent influence on relationships. So we're going to talk about how the experiences that we had as children and what we witnessed in terms of the relationship that our parents had, you know, the impact and the effect that it has on us as adults to be able to develop and maintain healthy relationships, or probably even the lack thereof. So that's what we'll be discussing. And in order for us to really get caught up in this juicy conversation, we're going to have a roundtable discussion. So you guys don't have to just hear from Billy or myself or Kalina, but we have a great crew of people that are joining us for tonight. Now, we have four individuals on the line with us that are going to be taking part in this roundtable conversation. We have Deidre out of Atlanta. Hey, Deidre.
Hey, Stacey.
We have Jason, also out of Atlanta. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We have Jessica on the line from Texas. Hey, Jessica.
Hello.
And last but certainly not least, Quentin from South Carolina. Hey, Quentin.
Hey, everyone.
Hey. All right, so we've got our whole roundtable together. And always, guys, when we have these roundtable discussions, just know that you can basically share whatever it is that you'd like to share. You know, with Mindshift Talk Radio, we're all sharing our own personal perspective, so we don't have to agree. We just have to agree to disagree if we choose to say it that way. But just basically, you know, giving people a new perspective. We're just sharing our perspective, so you don't have to agree with everything you hear on Mindshift Talk Radio. But as I say all the time, you definitely will walk away with some golden nuggets, as Billy likes to call them. You will be able to look at things from a different perspective. So that's the great thing about this show. And we definitely encourage you to give us a call if you'd like to share your thoughts, if you have any questions, any comments for myself or anyone that's on the call right now on the show. Feel free to give us a call. You can reach us at area code 347-989-0206. And Billy Miller is also in the chat room right now. So, hey, Chris Gloss in the chat room, first person in the chat room. Hola. So go ahead and join us in the chat room as well. But, guys, okay, getting into the conversation, getting into the topic. Now, I want to start this off by discussing this this news release that I found. And it was a couple of years ago, there was this study done at Iowa State University. And they were talking about, well, they were studying romantic choices and how they're influenced by child-parent relationships. And so initially going into the study, they were saying that, you know, based on what children observe in terms of how their parents relate to each other really does determine how they're going to be in relationship. But then as the study continued to go on, as they went further with the study, they determined that that wasn't necessarily the case. That it wasn't so much about what children observed with their parents, but it was the type of relationship that the children had with their own parents that really had more of an impact or more of a direct influence on how they were able to maintain healthy relationships later. Now, it's interesting because, you know, I'm sure you guys have heard this just like I've heard it all the time. You know, you hear the stories about, you know, the single black female that never had a father in the household, and so she's looking for a father figure in her man. Or you hear about the man that has issues trusting women because his mother wasn't there. He didn't feel like he was nurtured by his mother, or whatever it may be. You know, there's tons of stories and tons of situations that we're all aware of. So basically, I want us to go ahead and just discuss this topic, and I want to get your perspective as far as how you guys feel, you know, your relationships are impacted now as adults based on what you witnessed growing up and also what you experienced from your own parents. Now, Billy, I'm going to start with you just because I want to start off, I want to get a male perspective. You know, I don't want this to be a battle of the sexes tonight because I know how that can happen. The good thing is we don't have Dr. Io on the line because she'll be ready to go toe-to-toe. So we're going to keep it kosher today. Billy, what are your thoughts about the topic that we're discussing tonight?
Well, I know in my own personal life how it was affected because my father, when I was growing up, my father was a pimp. He was a player. And my uncles were the same way. They were, you know, playboys and players. And my oldest brother was the same way. So by default, when I grew up, you know, that's all I wanted to be. So all through high school and all through college, you know, I had this playboy player mentality. And so that affected my relationship growing up, and it wasn't until years later after I got saved. And even then, it took more than that. I had to renew my mind to go in the right direction. So what your parents do, you know, when you're growing up and what you observe, you know, it does affect you growing up because you become with how your parents live, not necessarily by what they say, but you watch what they do, and you want to, you know, every son want to grow up and be like his daddy. Well, it was a good thing, you know, if he was a hustler, they want to grow up and be a hustler like daddy, driving a Cadillac like daddy, or whatever the situation was, whether it was positive or negative. And so it can be effective, positively or negatively.
Definitely. Now, Deidre, I know you come from a two-parent household, which is awesome. I've you know, just seeing what type of interaction you have with your family, and it's just such a blessing to be around your family. But tell us what your thoughts are on the topic, because you definitely have a different perspective than I do. So what are your thoughts?
Thank you so much for that compliment about my family. Both of my parents, mom and dad, they are very strong religiously. So growing up, my father was active in cooking. He also helped clean, and he continues to do that now. He helps clean up the kitchen. They never had a male-female role. Mom was mom, dad was dad, but there's not anything in particular in this house that dad could not do. He still did the male stuff, which is washing the cars, keeping the yard cut, taking out trash. He doesn't allow my mom to take out trash. He keeps her car clean. Keep it maintained, like taking it to get the oil changed, tires rotated, all the things that men do. So he stayed in his role. My mom stays in her role. And what it has taught me is that I am waiting patiently for my husband because I want him to be able to take on that same role.
Awesome. Awesome. One of you guys, I know it sounds like when you guys are out, if you could just mute out your line if you're out. I hear a train going by or something. So thank you. That's awesome. Quentin, I'm not very familiar with, you know, your background, so I'm curious to know what type of relationship did you witness growing up with your parents?
I, too, came from a two-parent family. My father was ex-military. Mother was an entrepreneur. So I was lucky enough to have both parents support me and raise me. For the most part, they didn't have gender roles. Everybody pretty much did equal shares around the house. Both cleaned, both did, took the cars to maintenance and stuff like that. So growing up, I never was the person that says a man should do this, a woman should do this. I've always thought of equal opportunity in that situation as far as relationships concerned.
Awesome. Now, how does that affect your relationship now in terms of what you're looking for in your wife? don't rest to answer. Just
Well, it's like because my mom was an entrepreneur and started her own business. I've always looked for a girl, a woman who's not very trying to be a housewife, but more so trying to be on the workforce, some person, you know, that's who I seem to relate to more so.
Okay.
As far as my own relationship, I'm trying to think the best way to put it.
And I don't mean to get you in trouble.
No, not at all. Definitely more, because of my mom, definitely more independent women. Very independent, very confident. But with me being best example. You know how in some relationships or some men feel like what she said earlier, a man's role is to do this and a woman's role is to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Because of my upbringing, I'm not that person. I'm not the type of person that feels like I should be doing the mechanical work and you should be doing the cooking or whatnot. I'm looking, because of the way I am in my relationship now and the way it is right now, we both share equal values, equal house chores when the time comes, and pretty much the same type of personality. And it's almost kind of a mirror image of how my family was as well.
Okay. Jason, tell us about what you saw growing up. What did you see growing up?
Well, I'm 35 years old, and my mom and dad got divorced 35 years ago. And every summer and during the weekends, a lot of times, I went to go live with my dad, and I stayed with my mom otherwise until I turned 13. My brother went to go stay with my dad at the age of 13, and I went to go stay with my dad at the age of 13, which I think was the best thing to ever, you know, happen. Now, my parents were like brother and sister in raising me and my brother. They were like best friends. I mean, I never grew up to see them argue, fight, fuss. They always got along. They always were happy to see each other. My mom always said good things about my dad, and my dad said good things about my mom. And I got to witness my mom have boyfriends. I got to witness my dad have girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
And they had two different households. So after spending the summer with my dad, and I come home, I know I had to turn my whole hat around, because my mom managed her house completely different than my dad. As far as a relationship standpoint, I see now my dad got remarried and my mom got remarried. And my step-parents and my, you know, get along great. My mom calls my stepmother wife-in-law. So I always approached the relationships with this mindset that sometimes wives don't make the ideal mother. And sometimes the ideal mother doesn't make, you know, don't make you them the ideal wife. So I can separate the two because I didn't see as the marriage thing being the only way. I was a little bit more flexible mentally. I mean, when I look at a woman, I look at certain character things and be like, ooh, she makes a good mother.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things that I like in a woman, sometimes, you know, that might not be the case. It was more of my decision for a partner.
So when you say, okay, she would make a great mother, like what do you see in her that would make you say, okay, she could be a great mother?
Maybe the nurturing aspect, maybe a type of character, maybe certain signs like that, things like that. Maybe her attitude towards me, being that
okay.
I don't have to worry about drama and we can work together. She makes a good team player. She's very logical, you know, reasonable. It's not like a lot of hate in her and so forth. Because, you know, some women, you can tell if something happens within our relationship, they use the kid as a weapon. And there's a little character flaws and little things that will show up in a relationship to tell you what type of person they are. You might ignore them. But I look at things and I get credit where there's credit due, and I'd be like, you know, this woman would make, you know, a good mother. And it might not be a woman that could occupy my attention span 24/7 enough for me to, you know, say I'm gonna stay with you. But you know, like I say, I'm flexible. I'm flexible mentally like that.
Wait a minute. Now, Jason, and Jessica, we're coming to you next, okay? But I have to touch on what Jason just said because you're going to have to explain that one for me, Jason, because that just kind of ruffled my feathers a little bit, that this woman would be good enough to have your babies, but you don't think she would necessarily be good enough to be wifey. So
well,
why even well, so?
Well, When I say marriage, to me, marriage is a union of the mind, body, spirit, all that good stuff. But
okay.
I still see it being forever, you know. And if she's a good team player and we can work together on raising kids and we can get along, that's all I'm really concerned about. Now, if one has to really pressure or push or feels more comfortable with having the title of marriage,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, I understand how that programming, you know, works and how I know how strong of a programming it is, especially if you were raised in a two-parent household.
Right.
But,
okay, we're going to come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come back to that. But, no, thank you. I want to go ahead and go to Jessica. Jessica, what's your thoughts about what we've been discussing?
Well, I myself came from a two-parent household, too. I think it's kind of traditional, and my parents are both really religious also. And I see now that the way I was raised and looking at their relationship, it really affects all the relationships that I have, and which at this time in my life, most of my relationships are friendship relationships. And the biggest thing that I learned from them is to respect relationships, period. No matter what the roles are, even in a marriage or for people who aren't married, you know, they just taught me to respect people's relationships, period. And so it played a big role as far as how I look at relationships and when I enter into relationships. I think back often to, for example, how my dad treated my mom or how my mom treated my dad. I mean, that just automatically comes up into my head when I look at people, their relationships, or if I'm going to enter into a relationship myself. It's just an automatic thought. You know, my dad was a real soft-spoken man. He's real gentle. At the same time, he's firm, you know, so I always look at that. And I know for a fact that it affects how I go into relationships and how I see relationships.
Do you tend to find yourself being attracted to men that have more of those qualities or those characteristics that your dad has?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now,
it's just
with
automatic.
Go ahead.
It's just an automatic thought. Yes.
Okay.
And even, for instance, one time in particular, I had a really close friend. I have a close friend. He's like a brother to me. And I was on the phone with him, and I really wasn't paying attention to what he was saying. And he kind of raised his voice at me, right? And I consider myself to be a really, really, you know, a strong person. But I just turned into this little weak person because I had never experienced that before. I had never heard it happen before. It had never happened to me before. And I didn't even know how to respond. Now, he didn't mean anything by it. He was just trying to get my attention, but he raised his voice. And so I was like, okay, I'm here. And the next day I thought about it, and I was like, look, you raised your voice at me yesterday. I didn't appreciate it. And the thing is, I had never experienced it before, never been around anybody who did that type of thing. And so I know it affected me because that's not something that I had experienced. So, like I said before, I know for a fact that what we experience growing up or what we see or what we witness, you know, it'll come to us when we are even in just a regular friendship, you know.
Right. And it's interesting that we have so many of you on tonight that come from two-parent households, which is awesome, you know, because going into the show, I was thinking it would be challenging to find individuals that would be coming on to the show that would have great stories to tell or had great experiences growing up in two-parent households because, unfortunately, I know for me personally, most of the friends that I do have, especially childhood friends, did not come from two-parent households. You know, I'm included in that. So it's interesting to hear you guys talking about it. You know, in my adult life, especially after moving to the South, is when I've been able to come across more individuals that come from a two-parent household. Now, I don't know if geographical location or anything like that plays a huge part in it, but it's interesting to see the difference. It's such a huge difference based on where I grew up in California and then where I am now in Atlanta. It definitely is a difference. But what were you going to say, Billy?
Oh, I remember one time we was talking and Kalina brought up a point. Remember we were talking about watching our parents have arguments, but we were talking about the healthy arguments.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And by witnessing the healthy argument, you know, that helped us as an adult when we was in the relationships and we're in arguments versus you never seen your parents argue at all. You never really know how to handle a situation that you never, you know, experienced. So when it comes forward, you're like, okay, well, what do I do? I don't even know what mama did or daddy did because I never saw it. But if your parents handled it healthy, then you learn by watching what, you know, what they did, and then you know how to have that healthy relationship when you're in that same situation.
Definitely. Kalina, what are your thoughts?
Wow.
I've heard a lot.
I can appreciate the differences and even some of the similarities. Real short, I don't remember names, but the young man that spoke about his parents being separated and still being able to, from what I hear him say, develop a very nurturing relationship. He sounds pretty balanced in his own experience. And what I heard him say was that he would be pretty much, when he said what he said about the woman could have characteristics of being a mother, and what I heard was not necessarily a wife, I pretty much got that. And it came from much of what you all are talking about tonight, his own personal experience. So for him, that would make sense. And he would need to be able to find a woman who had similar belief systems, and I think they can go along. Because all of what I'm hearing is just that. Now, the question I have is, and I know you all can answer it if you like, but I'm real curious to find out, at what age were you all aware of the conditionings of your parents? That's one question. And the next question would be, again, volunteering, no demands, just curiosity. Where are you presently in your relationship? Are you married, single, divorced, happy, sad? And I'm more so for you to talk to yourself about it, because what I've found in my 30-some years of working in this field is that, sadly enough, we don't get this information early enough as it relates to recognizing it, so that we can make the decisions that will have us be in a relationship that's conducive to our conditionings. And so I think that's what's most important tonight, if we do anything with this conversation, is to begin to help the people who are listening and ourselves realize that, for the most part, we didn't know this when we left home. We have, for the most part, found out from hit and miss, blood, sweat, and tears. And I am talking about myself also. So what I've done is, in my learnings, is to try to pass it back to my children, to say to them, listen, this is how you are because this is how I am. This is what you're going to think. Basically, this is what I think, and this is the kind of man you're going to get used to because this is the way your dad is. Or this is the kind of man I want you to realize and not marry because of these reasons. And this is when they were 8, 9, 10 years old. So I think that's what's most important for me as we move forward in this particular conversation.
Definitely. And I agree. Like I said, you know, for me personally, I think I've been rolled around, bruised, and beat up along the way, but it's been a great journey for me and a great experience. And Kalina just asked a question. You just asked about, you know, where everyone is now in terms of a relationship and are they happy or are they sad? And I thought that was, those were great questions to ask because, you know, we can continue to talk about this topic all night, but at the end of the day, where are you right now? Because we need to understand where we are right now in order for us to make that change or that shift, as we talk about so often on the show. But you have to really determine where you are right now. And for some people, you know, I think there are some people that, and I'm only going off, you know, perception, but I think some people can come from that healthy two-parent background. But we see stories all the time where kids come from that quote-unquote happy family and still turn out to do some really crazy and off-the-wall things. And then you have other children that come from a single-parent household. Maybe a father wasn't present, or in Billy's situation, maybe the mother is not present. You know, he's a single dad. And yet the children come out
fine. They're balanced. They nurture and maintain and develop healthy relationships, and there isn't a challenge. So how do you explain that? You know, for those of you that are on the panel right now, you guys seem to be pretty sharp and on point coming from two-parent households. But, you know, what do you guys think about those people that come from two-parent households that are off a little bit, that aren't able to have
Can I say something before you get past that? Let me please say this? The thing about that statement is the fact that we aren't able to say that except that we live with the people. What we are able to say is from the outside, they look like a happy family. And that is a huge myth and misconception that's across culture, across communities. People say, I'm so confused because his house is that. And the first question I ask, did you live with them? And if the answer is no, then you only have a perception. So this is my rule of thumb. You are what you live, and you live what you are. So if you see a child or children coming from what you perceive to be a happy household who tend to be less balanced than you would think based on that perception, then the thing to begin to understand is that what you're seeing in their behavior is more accurate than your perception. Does that make sense?
Awesome. It makes total and complete sense. That's what I said. It is
okay.
My perception.
Yeah, and we have to really believe that, because if we don't, we'll feed into the fact that somehow they mysteriously develop these abnormal behaviors and their family was, you know, textbook perfect. That just is not going to happen. That's just not going to happen. A child brings out of the house which the parent want in some cases to not be brought out of the house because they don't know anything else except what they were taught. That's why they get in trouble in the grocery store. It's not because the grocery store caused them to act out. They're acting out in the grocery store because that's how they act in the house.
So you're saying, you know, we have this perception that it's a happy family. Everything looks good when they're outside. They look like the Huxtables. So when they're back at home, we don't know what's going on. It could be a whole bunch of madness going on at home.
Unless you live in the house.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And another misconception that goes with that is when it comes to marriage, a lot of times we confuse longevity with success. In other words, we think because they've been married for 15 years, that is automatically successful.
Exactly.
That one partner could be living in hell for, you know, that whole time, or children getting molested for years, you know, in situations. But just because they were together for years doesn't mean it was successful for years.
And people ask all the time, how did they stay married for 30 years and then get a divorce? Because they were waiting for that 30 years to come so they could get that divorce.
Right. That's the truth.
They were waiting for something to get past.
Right.
I think that's the most healthiest way to look at it. To, you know, if we could really break it down and begin to understand it, I think that we need to really defunct some of the misconceptions that we have and really be able to look at ourselves introspectively and know personally. And then, you know, people who don't know me will know that I've had 4 marriages and 4 divorces because I came from a household where my family gave me the idea that marriage was simple and easy. Never saw my parents argue. They were just syrupy. So when I confronted my first conflict in my first relationship, I mean, I crashed and burned because there was nothing there for me to defend. I was like, no, daddy don't say that. No, daddy never did that. No. You know, and it's taken me all that time to learn how to do a relationship. I think I might get it now. I don't know. Go ahead.
I hope you do. But, you know, for those of you, our guests that are on the panel, what are your thoughts about what Kalina just has to say? I know she asked about where you guys are right now in terms of relationship and whether you're happy or not.
I know. This is Jason speaking, and I know with me, I'm currently married, and I've been married for 4 years, and I'm happy. I mean, I'm happy, but that's my nature, you know. As far as fulfillment, I question that, and I question that because I understand my dilemma, because I knew going into a relationship, typically I've dated women where there was a lot of passion, but not a lot of logic and reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I married my wife because there's a lot of logic and reason and peace. On paper, she's dime piece. But sometimes the connection is not as strong as some of the other women that I had a lot of passion with, but I didn't have a lot of peace because it was always mess. And typically, logic and reason and passion don't occupy the same space at the same time.
Wow.
You wanna, I knew it was going to be a price to pay somewhere. I decided to go with the logic and reason.
So does that go back to what people say? So you hear some people say they settle. Would you consider that settling? Because I know some people would say that. I'm not saying it is or not, but just coming from you, Jason, would you say that you settled in a sense?
Either way, it would have been settling because she thinks the way she's capable of understanding my the way I manage this relationship. She understands. She's very cooperative. She works along with me. She's communicable. Well, she's a good communicator, a good listener. She's very loving. I love her. But like I said, sometimes I'm a man that's multidimensional. I need a woman of many hats. She's not as flexible as I am about a lot of things. She knows that about herself. And she understands how I am, you know, so it's not like we are both oblivious, which helps us get through it. So she knows, you know, where my voids are because I let her know. And and she tells me where her voids are. I've always approached a relationship like, you know, as a fragile. Relationship is very fragile. If you go in a relationship thinking that a divorce is not an option, then you're setting yourself up for failure.
Really?
I think you should, yeah. Because you have a tendency to dance on thin ice.
Deidre, what are your thoughts about that?
I don't even know where to start with his comment. When he decided to get married to his wife, some people feel like they do have to find 100% of everything you want in one person. And then there are other people who feel like I'll never find 100% of what I need or want in a person. So that person made him happy enough or happy to the level of him being able to, you know, deal with that person the rest of his life or for 4 years of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And then his last comment about divorce, if you go into the relationship thinking that divorce is not an option, I guess you're kind of mistaken. Me being divorced and coming from a two-parent household, my divorce was very hurtful in my life. I went through a deep state of depression because I felt like I failed my family because my parents have been married for 40 years, and I felt like my marriage should be exactly what they have. So sometimes there is an illusion there that what you see is what you will have and what you'll do.
And that's the point that I was trying to make, Deidre. This is Kalina. And that is what's the most important to me because my parents are still married, and I've been married and divorced 4 times. And my first marriage absolutely was traumatic because I thought it was forever and ever and ever. They didn't give me any skills to deal with it, and I got married the first time at 19. And when I think about that now, I'm 52 now. I still can't even believe it happened in my life because I'm such a different person now. And the reason why I went through those marriages as quickly as I did was because I was, again, accustomed to, someone said about screaming and yelling, I was accustomed to certain things without even realizing the conditioning. So I think by my second marriage, I was able to say, this is what I like. By my third marriage, I was able to say, this is what I must have. by my fourth marriage, I said, there's no way I'm going to do anything else except this. Now, my fourth marriage lasted for 18 years. So, and before I get off this, I want to say this. The reason why I can be comfortable being a therapist and having my history is because I'm able to say, with all of that, I never left the relationship and did not remain friends. Because if my parents taught me anything for real, was the fact that you have self-respect and you have the ability, as Stacy said, to agree to disagree. And through my horrible divorce, the first one, we made up, we stayed friends. Through the other three, we made up, we're still friends. So I think that's an important part, too, that I no longer felt that I had failed. What I feel is that I have learned valuable lessons that I need to now pass on to my two daughters.
There's one point I wanted to clarify about what I said, about the passion versus the connection. And I was saying how my wife was a dime piece on paper and so forth and whatnot. What I realized is that some of the benefits of having a relationship where there's not so much passion, more logic and reason, you can talk and you can work things out. You don't have to worry about a lot of stress. Everything is balanced. The house is always at peace, which is cool. But when you have a void, when you have passion, you have a tendency to have more patience and you have a tendency to forgive certain things that you typically wouldn't if there isn't if it's not there. So over the last, I guess you could say, year or so, I've said this, if there's one thing, when I carefully thought out what I was going to do and, you know, getting married to my wife and all, one thing that's one little factor that I overlooked was that I didn't expect. Because what happens is, it seems like you get annoyed about little things that don't have anything to do with anything, really. That person, when you have a void that is there and that's lacking. And when I said about the thin ice, I said that in my marriage or in my relationships, I never wanted anybody to be neglectful of me. That was a way of saying, I'm going to treat you as if you can walk out that door and leave me. And I want you to treat me as if you want me to stay and so forth. And when people are oblivious about divorce or have this facade that we're going to be together forever and I can talk to you any kind of way, I can treat you any kind of way and this, that, and the other, and we got all of this invested in each other that I can treat you anyway and you won't leave. Or I'll say contrary move frere, how that thing goes, that if you realize that divorce is real and you know, remind a person that, you know, I appreciate you, I love you, I respect you, everything is cool, for, you know, otherwise, you know, I wouldn't be here, I think they would appreciate the same. They appreciate it a lot more when you realize that divorce is true. Divorce is real. Divorce is common. Damn near more common than successful marriages. And I think when you have a foundation and have that realization up front, I think it does away with a lot of complacency.
Do you think that maybe you're so open to divorce because in your situation growing up, it was a positive experience? You know, your parents divorced, like you said, early on. They both remarried later. Your mom calls your husband, your father's new wife, the wife-in-law and so forth. Do you think maybe that's why you're so casual about commitment and marriage and you just feel like, you know, divorce is always an option because of the experience you have?
I'm more open casual with divorce because I know it's real. And I know that if someone is not acting in accordance, then we don't have to fight, we don't have to argue, we don't have to be together. So, you know, we don't have to do this. I like to function in the parameters of wants rather than needs. You're here because you want to be here, you should be acting like you want to be here, and vice versa. If I ain't acting like I want to be here, and I'm not filling my role, and you seem like you got something better, then, you know, you got the option, too. It's the same premise of, like, my niece. My brother can tell her 10 times to do something. I can tell her once.
Mm-hmm.
She's convinced that there's going to be some repercussions if I tell her more than once. So I don't have to tell her 3, 4, or 5 times.
Right, right.
So it's not the fact that I'm a spanker. It's the fact that she thinks I'm a spanker. So I don't have to spank her.
I would love to hear from your wife in terms of how secure she is in that relationship.
It would depend upon how much she is like him.
Right. I would love
she's
to hear.
Secure. She's secure, not necessarily in she's secure in the fact that we will always love each other and
mm-hmm.
that she likes me, not just loves me.
Okay.
You know, and I like her, not just love her. When someone says I like you, sometimes that's just as big as a confidence saying I love you. Because like, you know, it's some logic. You know, you can say why you like some people. You can hate people that you love, you know. But she actually, you know, likes me. She thinks I'm cool cat, and vice versa.
Right. Jessica,
so,
you're on fire. What's going on in Texas, Jessica? What are you thinking about the conversation?
I'm kind of sitting here like, wow. Really. I agree with what Dr. Brown said. Like, she was like, do you live with people who say they grew up in the home with a happy marriage, right? I look at it like, I like looking at nice houses, right? When I drive past them, I'm like, that's a nice house. But what makes it a nice house is the part that I don't see, and that's the foundation. You know, I can't see if the foundation is good from just driving past the house. So I can't say that, you know, everybody who came from a two-parent home had a good home just because they say they did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see the main part of it. And people can only go by what you say if it was good. And really, if I go into a relationship, right now at this point in my life, I'm happily single. That's what I call it. And that's a choice. And if I go into a relationship and I don't become the woman that my mom was, that's a choice also. So people make their own choices if they follow the example that they had growing up. It doesn't mean that they'll end up like that in their relationship. You know, it's your choice still. I have people in my family, and I just didn't look at my parents' relationship. There were things about my parents' relationship or marriage that I wouldn't do, and that was things like a financial responsibility. You know, I'd go in a different direction. But the thing that I looked at and what was most important to me is how they treated each other. Whatever I do in the future in my relationship is going to be my choice still.
Right.
You know,
yeah, that's
I choose to do what I want to do.
Let me jump in here right quick and say mm-hmm. this. Again, we individually are only able to make choices via our experiences. Does that make sense? Because sometimes people say choice, you know, you make a choice or you have the ability to make a choice, and they think about it blanketly. Each of our choices comes from our own personal experiences. And the reason why that's important to hear and attempt to understand is because people also have the thing of saying, that's common sense. Common sense will tell you. And that is such a misleading statement, because common sense is only common among people who've had common experiences, who have decided to use those experiences as a way by which to make their decision. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
help me,
I don't
y'all.
Really get it.
Okay.
I really don't get that. But.
Does anybody else not get it?
I understand what you're saying.
Somebody help me.
Say it. What I'm hearing is I can only make a choice based on an experience that I've had.
No, all of us individually makes our choices based on our experiences. And an example is, okay, when I'm looking at, let's say, marriage and relationship, that's what we're talking about. When I look at whether I'm going to get married or get a divorce or who I'm going to marry or whatever, the choices I make inside of that decision is based on my experiences. So when someone else comes to me and say, girl, why'd you do that? I would have done A, B, C, D. Of course you would, because those are your experiences. And the only time our experiences, the only time our choices are similar is if our experiences are similar. And inside of that similarity, we also have to have some similarity of personalities. Am I getting any closer to you? And the reason why I'm trying to say this is because what happens on the unconscious level is that we're not aware of the fact that choices are individualized. And that's sometimes why we even have arguments inside of relationships, because our choices seem so plain, clear, and simple to us, and we look at the other person and say, how did you come up with that? They came up with it because they have different experiences. Even sometimes in the same household, you have different experiences. That's why your brothers and your sisters look so different than you do, because you grew up with the same mom, same dad, or same situation, and you come out totally different. Because inside that house, you have five brothers and sisters. You have five different experiences. So their choices are based on their own personal experiences, no matter what. Even if you're Siamese twins.
That's why I say, you know, when people say, are you committed? Are you afraid of commitment? I'm like, commitment. You know, two different people trying to be committed to so many different things. To me, I just think it lacks too much flexibility. I have a flexible mind.
Commitment is defined by your experiences.
I prefer to say devoted. How about that? I typically go with devoted versus committed.
And what's your name?
Jason.
And Jason, even with that, and Stacy knows that this is one of my pet peeves, you have to define what devoted means to you via your experience before we can be talking about the same word.
I do. I realized when I was saying that, I was going to have to explain what I perceive devotion to be.
And the person that you could be devoted to, if you two have the same definition, then you are then now devoted to each other if your definitions are similar. And if they're not, then you're not.
That's true. So basically you're saying it's just, the terminology is the same as commitment.
No, the definition. When you say commitment, what do you mean when you say commitment? When she says commitment, what does she mean when she says commitment? And if you haven't had that conversation, then you're not talking about the same thing. Unless you've had the conversation, you realize that you have similar definitions. And I'm going to stop talking, Stacey. I'm done.
No, this is great. You know, I'm looking at the chat room. For those of you guys that are not on the chat, I encourage you to get in that chat because there's a whole bunch of conversation going on. But Billy just said something that was just so awesome. And he said, it's our heart, not the dictionary, that defines similar terms. I thought that was really powerful. Go, Billy.
Tell me what you mean, Billy. What do you mean?
Well, you got to have a, you know, your heart is fine, that's good, but in communicating, you need to sync up terminology, you know. You got to make sure you're on the same page.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, Colleen, it was pretty much the same thing you were saying. You were saying, what does that mean to you? So
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's not, even though we can be talking about the same word, but you might have a different a meaning to it. You know, like some people say dating. Some people say, oh, no, I don't date. I court. Or some people say
they
get all mixed up with the terms, but it's not the word that defines it. It's what it means to you that defines it.
Let me give you a quick example, and I'm going to stop talking for real. Quick example. I love you. We say it all the time. Now, you say to your girlfriend, I love you, and she says, I love you too. And you have a date, and the date starts at 8 o'clock. You're going to pick her up. Okay? You decide, okay, I'm going to be about 30 minutes late. In her world, I love you mean, if you're going to be 15 minutes late, you call me. Okay, after the 16th minute, she's upset. You're late, you didn't call. So there's no way you could love me because you didn't call. You walk up to the door 30 minutes late, you can't imagine why she's upset because you love her. But in your world, I'm going to call you if I'm 31 minutes late. And you never have a discussion about what love means, but now you're frustrated. You don't know why she's upset, and she doesn't know why you don't know that she's upset, but you've never defined what I love you means in those kinds of terms. So there ensues the argument where nobody really knows the basis. You're late. No, I'm not. I was coming. Why you didn't call me? I was going to call you, but I'm not really late.
I'm sorry. I'm just laughing because I'm always the one that's late. Sorry.
I got a question, Jason, that I'm curious about. What you were saying earlier about when you were saying divorce is an option, right? You were saying because when a person, like, can abuse the situation if they know you're not going anywhere. And I guess I was curious of how do you convey that to your wife? Like, have you ever threatened to leave or anything like that? How do you convey to her that, you know, hey, don't try to abuse this because, you know, I can leave. You know, it can be.
I don't have to. She knows me pretty good. She knows my word is, you know, is pretty bond. You know, so I don't make threats. My actions have been pretty, you know, I don't threaten her. She doesn't know. She doesn't know. I don't use things against her. She knows I'm very liberal. But all I'm saying is, I know I desire to be. I need to be in an environment where I feel like I'm appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every now and then I do a temperature check. I ask her, do you feel appreciated? Do you feel like I respect you? Do you feel lusted? And I might ask her on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm going to ask you certain questions like that to gauge what I need to brush up on and so forth like that. Because mm-hmm. I would like for it to occur to her to ask me those questions so she would know where to brush up on. Even though we both might be doing all that we're supposed to do and need to do, doesn't mean that our relationship is 100% divorce proof but regardless of divorce, we both agreed to be friends and to be in each other's lives regardless. And anybody else that we deal with is going to have to know and understand that. But we've never discussed divorce. For us, we never said that I don't feel that it's going to ever happen. You know, I don't see it, but but I don't want that complacency there. I don't want her to, I just don't think the complacency, and I see that in a lot of marriages where I see people just very neglectful and assumptive that person's going to always be there. I don't no longer have to dress and look sexy. Guys, I don't have to go to the gym and put it down like I used to or you know, whatever. I know I don't have room for that type. I'm not the type of person you're going to, you know, to take for granted or neglect.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my put on that, I guess.
Wow, awesome. Quentin. I just thought about Quentin. Before I get to you, Jason, I just have one question, if you don't mind me asking. How long did you and your wife date before deciding to get married?
We started dating in 95. And
okay.
So I'm 35 years old, and I've been in a relationship. Practically, we've always dated, never broke up, never had, like, a time where we broke up and been off. And then before I dated her, I dated a girl in high school. About 5 years, so we've been together a while. Even though we've been together, you know, during them, say we got married. I think we were dating for 14 years before we got married, and she knows that. It was points in time when she was ready, when she was not ready, and she was like, "I'm glad you didn't propose to me or we got married then, because at that point in time I wasn't ready." And I knew that. I knew she wasn't ready. And sometimes I still scratch my head and be like, damn, you know, I like to, I'm a free spirit. I like to do what I want to do, so.
So how is that working in your marriage with you being such a free spirit?
It works with her because she's a free spirit, too, and she understands it. She understands that, you know, understand that. But at the same time, she doesn't have all the resources to be a free spirit like I do. I have friends, and I'll go places solo, or I'll go places with her. You know, sometimes hers is a little bit more complicated. So, but at the same time, she was like, she likes the option to be able to do something. And she doesn't have to want to deal with resentment for doing what she wants to do. So, and most people don't want to have to deal with resentment for doing what they want to do. As long as she can communicate it to me in a manner that's reasonable and that I feel like it's coming from a place of genuality and she's telling the truth, and she, you know, I can normally deal with, you know, or
if
agree
with.
If
we have a couple of people in the chat room asking for you to define free spirit, a couple of people in the chat room want to know, what do you mean by free spirit?
Free spirit. Well, for one, I don't like a lot of nothing. I like a little bit of everything, you know. I like to experience and learn new things about myself. I like to, I don't know what I want to do sometimes, so I'm doing it. So I'm kind of impulsive. Like I said, I'm not judgmental. I like for people to, as long as they're not victimizing or forsaking anybody, I say, hey, do what you want to do. You know, I throw my hands up, hey, you ain't messing with my money. You ain't victimizing or forsaking me. I'm cool with you. You good. And I wish people had the same attitude about me, doing what I want to do, as long as I ain't hurting nobody.
So as long as you guys have the understanding, right?
Yeah. I'm able to talk to her. And she's able to be like, I can see you on that. That's real talk. I appreciate that. That's real talk. And,
well,
I
definitely appreciate you being honest on the show today because I know we've been having a lot of questions directed at you, but you've had a lot to say. And so I definitely appreciate you being honest and transparent. I commend that. So, again, I thank you for being on the show. And that's for all of you guys that are on our panel. I see we're coming up to a close, Jason, so I don't mean to cut you off. But we are going to continue this discussion next week. So we are going to have part two of this. And, Jason, we'd be happy to have you come back if you're able to come back on next week.
Awesome.
Okay. And for Jessica and Deidre and Quinn, thank you so much for being on tonight's episode of Mindshift Talk Radio. Kalina, as always, it was a pleasure having you on the line. I mean, you definitely schooled us today, but you always do, so I appreciate you being here. And Billy, great stuff, as always, even in the chat room, you know, dropping that knowledge. So I appreciate you as well, Billy. But thank you to those of you that are in the chat room. I mean, there was a lot going on there today. And as always, I encourage you, if you're not able to call in, to go ahead and state your comments or ask your questions or your concerns, please feel free to join us in the chat room because there's always a lot going on in the chat room. But I encourage you guys to come back next week. Join us again for Mindshift Talk Radio at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can also join us on Facebook. We have a Mindshift Talk on Facebook. So, again, thank you guys for joining us. As always, have a phenomenal week. Keep an open mind and an open perspective, and we will talk to you guys next week. Be blessed. Bye-bye.
Mindshift Radio.